And we're holding on Samachamad Beis by the Mishnah near close to the bottom. Okay, another case of a Tanai, another case of Kiddushin al Tanai. The man says, I'm not sheyeshli base kur offer. He says, I'm the Kaddish you on condition that I have a base kur of land. Offer literally means dirt, but it means cultivable land. A base kur is the area in which you could plant a kur of wheat or barley or other such grains. It's defined as, Rashi explains, defined as 75,000 square amas. If you were to make a square of it, it comes out to about 273 amas and change square. Roughly 75,000 square amas, so 273 and change to a side. An amma is about a foot and a half. Very roughly speaking, a base core is about the size of a Crown Heights block. So he says, I'm enough that I have such a thing. Harei the Mekodesh is Yeshla. Like in the previous mission, he's Shid Mekodesh, provided that he actually has it. I'm enough to Yeshla to Mokum Plani. What if he says, I'm enough that I have the base core in such and such a place? Well, then, Im Yeshla Ba'is Mokum Mekodesh, Viarena, if he actually has land, a base core size piece of land in that place, then Shid Mekodesh. V'im La'Vein Mekodesh, and if not, then not. Which again, seems to be Poshet, and the Gemara will talk about why we need to say that. Amanash Arech base core offer. What if he says Amanash that I will show you that I have a base core of land? It's similar. The Gemara is going to ask why we need both then. I raise him a Kodesh. So I know that she's a Kodesh provided that he shows her. The Imhera Babika, and again, if he shows, like before with Shohani, here it's a similar thing. If he shows her a valley that has many fields in it, but none of them belong to him, ain't him a Kodesh, then she's not a Kodesh. So again, the Gemara starts off with a discussion similar to what we had yesterday. Why does the Mishnah say a flat statement that if he does not have, that in the second case at least, that if he doesn't have the Makom Pliny, then she's not Makodesh? What do you mean she's not Makodesh? What if he does have land over there and she just doesn't know about it? But oh, you did not have Tanya. We learned about Chashin and Shem Yeshle. That in fact we do have to be choshish that maybe he does have land and therefore would be valid kibushin. And again, the answer is like Kasha, Habu Kedushin Vader, Habu Kedushin Sa. The Mishnah, when it says a case being Lav Einu Mekudesh, it just means there's no Kedushin Vader. The Braita spells out that there may still be Kedushin Sa. Lomali the Mishnah Gabi Arab, Lomali the Mishnah Gabi Zizis. You have to ask, why does the Mishnah have to separately tell us in the case of land and in the case of money? Some of the Farshim explain, actually, that Mora's question is not so much on the Mishnayis, but rather on the Braitis that spell out, let's say, that in both cases, even if we don't know that he has this Kedushas Hub. Anyway, the answer is Tzricha. We need both of them. The Yeshmin and Gabi Zuzi, because if the Mishnayis or the Braitis had only told us the case of money, you could say the reason why you could argue that there's a chash that maybe he does have the money, even if you don't know that he does, Misham Davidi in Shidimatni. Because it's very common for people to hide their money. People don't always make it public how much money they have. Therefore, he may well have 200 zuz without her actually knowing about it. And therefore, you could argue that there's a suffix kedushin in that case. Aval ara, but when it comes to land, Ema, you would think, Ida islay ara, if he actually has land, kola islay, you would think there would be a kol for it. And therefore, if there's no kol that he has a base core of land, you would think it must be a given that he taka doesn't have any, and therefore there shouldn't even be suffix kedushin. Kamash malon, that we don't say that. That's the Mephoshim talk about. Why didn't it say the other way around? Why didn't it say in the case of land, and we could deduce the case of money from it? Among the various answers that are given is this is the order in which the Mishnayos were taught. First they taught about land, then they taught about money, then they taught about land. The Braises in turn are following on the Mishnah and explaining that in each case they have suffix and kedushas. So the Braises had no choice but to follow the Mishnah. Once the Mishnah had to mention money and had to mention land, then the Braises had to follow suit. We said Amanas Yeshle Makom Pliny. If he says Amanas that I have land in such and such a place, Im Yeshle Tolos. If he has land there, that she's Mekodesh, and if not, then not. Question is Pshita. The answer is now detainment, because you might think, Oh my Lord, he can argue to her, My Nachgalachmina. So what do you care if the field is not exactly where I said it is? And not to Rachno My Sina. What's the purpose of that? You want to make sure before you accept my condition that I have a base core of cultivable land. The Sama, you want to make sure that I have a farm that we can support ourselves from. Well, what do you care if it's not exactly where I said? I'll be Matriach and I'll go the distance in order to bring the produce to me. No, the Gemara says that. The Gemara is saying, I'm not Tarach, no my sinner. I'll go to the trouble of going and bringing the Tavua home. So what do you care how far away it is? Kamashmalan, therefore, the Chiddush is that we don't say it that way.
We don't say
that he can make that argument, and therefore he can say that I didn't really mean it must be Dafka here, as long as I have a cultivable field, which is an arable field, which is a base core in size. What do you care where it is? Kamashmalan, we don't say that, since he specified the place, and it has to be that place. Actually, the Rashi book talks about an interesting possibility. What if he said that I have a field further away, and in fact, his field is closer to the city? Can we say then? On the face of it, if the problem is that why would you say Kamash Malon? What would be the logic to say if it's not in the same place? Yeah. The logic is that there's Tucha involved. Sometimes she may want to go visit the field, for example, and it'll be away and it'll be further away, and it'll be a hassle. Lachora, if it's closer, there shouldn't be an issue.
Well, it could be closer, but still,
The point is, if he said I have a field 10 miles from the city, and it turns out it's really 5 miles from the city, there's less of a Tucha.
Still not in specification.
Okay, so the Rashba wants to say that in that case, maybe it would be a valid condition, because then she can't argue that there would be Tircha involved. Other Rishonim, I think the Ritva and others talk about that, not necessarily. First of all, sometimes she may want a longer walk. She may want to be able, I want it to be further away. It may be that a certain place, let's say 10 miles away, she happens to have fields of her own, and therefore it'll be convenient. She'll be the Bar Mitzvah, whereas closer into the city, she may not be, et cetera. And finally, there is the idea that a couple of Rishonim bring up. After all, look, I mean, the fact is, he made a Tanai that it's in this place, so if it's not in this place, then okay, the Tanai hasn't been fulfilled.
That's
what you've got. Yeah. Okay. Then the Mishnah said, also, we have the case where he said, I'll show you a base kur. So we said, if he just shows her a valley that has lots of fields in it, but none of them are his, then she's not in the Kurdish. Tana, we learn in the Braisa. Because she didn't mean she wants to see a base kur. She meant she wants to see that he has a base kur. Wait. So then head of a vicar said, similar to yesterday. The head of a vicar ain't a kudesha. So therefore, if he shows her in a valley, she's not a kudesh. Again, the question is pshita. And the answer is, well, it's the nukat b'distura. Yes, but let's say, for example, he's a sharecropper in one of these fields. Then you could argue he has a certain bible over it. And in fact, that would be a stronger case than yesterday with the case of the iska. Hello? In the case of the iska, as we discussed yesterday, as long as the iska is in effect, he doesn't have the right to unilaterally dissolve it and take the proceeds. Here, as an artist, at the end of the season, he's going to be entitled to his 25 or 50 or whatever it is percent. You would think maybe that's a valid enough reason for it to be considered. I mean, imagine, for example, let's say he's an artist where he's supposed to get 25%. So let's say he's working a field that's the size of 4 base kur, 4 times the size you mentioned. Well, then his share is going to be the amount of grain that you would get out of one base kur field. You would think maybe that should be enough. Nope, no good. It's still because the Tanai was that he actually owned the base kur. Not that he's a sharecropper in it. It's not just that she wants to see that he has an income, that he has the income that you would get from one base kur field. She wants to see that he has the actual field itself, and an artist does. Now the Gemara is going to talk about you can have a case where this base core field is not all flat land. It has depressions in it. It has rocky areas in it. So the Gemara is going to bring now from 2 different cases in Halacha where we discuss whether such things are counted toward the area of a field or not. And then we're going to try to figure out which of those rules applies to our case over here. Hello.
How much personal did your upstairs?
I sent a WhatsApp message the other day. I saw you're on WhatsApp.
I wasn't here the other day.
I sent a WhatsApp message. You're on WhatsApp.
You sent a what?
A message on WhatsApp.
I don't have WhatsApp.
You do. Why you came up in my list. Hello, I'm on WhatsApp. Okay. I don't know. Sorry.
Does that mean on my phone?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, really. Okay, whatever. We'll get it another time. But yeah. This is where we are for now. Hand him a Gemara, please. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. So, like I say, we're going to compare now. We're going to discuss two other areas in Halacha where we discuss the question of what is included in the area of a field and what's not, and then we're going to see which of those applies to our case over here. So, Gabe Hektish Shnan. Now, when it comes to Hektish, we learn a Mishnah as follows in the Sechta Erechim. Hamakdish Sadeo Bishnasa Yovel, Bishasa Yovel, rather. If somebody is Makdish's field during the time when Yovel is in effect, meaning most of the time, the whole time of Yeshua, the Shoftim, and most of the first Beit HaMikdash. Until the Shavatim went into Golos, and then afterwards, when most of them were brought back by Yirmiyahu during the times of Yeshayahu 100 years later. So when Yovel is in effect, now we know, the Torah tells us that the fields return to their owners in Yovel, and in the case of Hekdesh, the Din is, the Torah talks about Parshas B'chukotai, if a person is Makdesh, a field, which is his ancestral property, a Sdeachuzah, then the Din is, if he's Makdesh it, if he buys it back before Yovel, fine. Then it stays in the family. That's that. If he doesn't buy it back in Yovel, what happens is it gets bought out by the Kohanim and it goes to them permanently.
Forever.
It becomes the Kohanim's property forever.
Is he giving some money? Or
no, he was Makdish to begin with. He was Makdish. He donated the field to Hekdesh. So like this, he or his son, whatever the Mishnah discusses over there, didn't redeem it before Yovel came. Somebody else, the Mishnah discusses over there, is it that somebody else came and redeemed it? Is it maybe even stayed in Hekdesh's hands? Whatever, let's not get into that. The point is, under certain circumstances, the Kohanim buy it out from Hekdesh, and it becomes their permanent property. It's one of the 24 Matnas Kohanim.
Can anybody come and redeem it?
Yes, and if they do... Anybody can come and redeem it, but if they do, it still goes from them to the Kohanim and Yovel. Because the rule is, unless it's in the hands of the original owner.
If it's redeemed, doesn't it go back to the original owner?
No. That would be the case if it wasn't Hekdesh, but because it's Hekdesh, the rules are different.
Who made it Hekdesh?
The original owner.
The new owner.
The original owner.
The original decided to make it Hekdesh.
The original owner, Yovel, decided to make his field his Deachol Hekdesh. Come till forever. Hekdesh is forever. Now,
they're allowed to do that?
Yeah,
he
made it Hekdesh. So now Yankel, who's unrelated to him, comes and redeems it from Hekdesh. What happens is Yankel holds on to it until Yovel. Comes Yovel, the Kohanim buy it out,
goes
to the Kohanim. And it goes back to Hekdesh. And then the Kohanim get it. Okay. Now,
somebody can redeem it again?
No, that's it. It belongs to the Kohanim. Well, it's the Kohanim, it's the Kohanim.
Which Kohanim did it?
The Kohanim whose Mishmar comes out during the Yom Kippur, the Kohanim whose Mishmar that Yom Kippur of Yovel comes out during their Mishmar's weekend.
They had to pay for it, huh?
Yeah, they had to pay for it. Okay. Anyway, how much, now when it comes to a Sdeachuzah, the Torah fixes a value for it. The Torah says, what you do is, for each base kur, or base chomer actually, because chomer and kur are two names for the same volume, a base kur is valued at 50 shekel. And that's 50 shekel if it's at the beginning of the yovel cycle. What it actually comes out is, what you actually do is you prorate it down over the years. Let's say a person is Makdish's field 10 years before yovel, then the value of the field is per base kur, it's 10 sloyim and 10 punyonim. A punyon is 1/48 of a sela, we learned earlier in the Sefer. If he himself wants to buy it back at that point, he would pay that amount. Okay, actually, he'd pay an extra chomish as well. If anybody else buys it from Hekdesh, that's the amount they pay at that point. Let's say 10 and 10. If they buy it 2 years later, it's 8 and 8, and so forth.
Can they buy it after the Kohanim have gotten it?
Can they buy it from the Kohanim? If the Kohanim are willing to sell it, maybe. I don't know.
Let's say this guy is Einikot, decides they want their original.
Okay, maybe. Whatever.
Is it still considered, and they buy it, to
the best of my knowledge.
Is it still considered Achuzah?
No, it will not be considered Achuzah. It'll be considered Shei Mikneh. It'll still go back to the Kohanim and Yovel.
It will.
Yeah. Okay. So, a machseder b'shasa Yovel, somebody is machdish's field during the time when Yovel is in effect, then if somebody wants to redeem it, you have to pay 50 sloyim for each zerach ha'masa'urim, for each base kur, for each area where you can plant one kur of barley. And again, that's 50 sloyim at the beginning of the Yovel cycle, and less depending on how close it is to Yovel. Now, what if in that field there are depressions that are 10 tefachim or more deep? Or there are rocks in there that are 10 or more tefachim tall, they do not get measured with it. When you're measuring the area of the field to figure out the value, you don't include those things. Whereas if they're less than 10 tefachim deep or tall, you do count them. They count towards the base core. Now, what does it mean they're not included with it, by the way? There's a number of different explanations among the Rishonim. Rashi says that it means that you don't count the slope. You have this depression in there, for example, the slope that goes down to the base of it, you don't count. You don't count it towards the base course.
You can't plant on a gully?
No, that's what the Gemara is going to ask. Tosfos says it can't mean they're not Kaddish at all, because the Tosfos brings based on a different Gemara, they do at least have to be Kaddish. The question is whether they count towards the base core for the value. There's other explanations as well. The question is, so now in Erechin, and also in Bava Basra, because this is also discussed in Bava Basra, the Gemara asks, fine, granted these gullies or these rocks are not measured together with the rest of the field to count towards the base core. Why don't they become Kaddish on their own? At the very least, for example, the bottom of the gully should count as a separate thing of its own.
Not the walls, but the
bottom of it. We're not talking about so deep that the sun doesn't shine in. There's something you can do with it. The Chorda is plantable. It's only 10 falcon deep, let's say. Tosfos discusses that, for example, the Rashbam mentions in Bava Basra that maybe it should mean that they should be counted like separate fields. Each of those gullies maybe should be considered like a field of its own, and it can be brought back from Hekdesh separate from the rest of the field. Tosfos says that can't mean what the Gemara is asking, because you can do that anyway. Even if you sold a regular flat field, you're able to be goyal half of it before you're able. So it can't be. Again, like I said, different Rishonim talk about different possibilities of what the question is exactly, but whatever. The bottom line is, it almost sounds as if we're saying that these gullies or these rocks are not Kaddish at all. Now, why not? So you might answer, okay, well, none of them is the size of a base core by itself, therefore it's not significant enough to calculate. Can't be. But Uruminu, we have a contradiction. A Braisa says, when it says Sode Matam Adloima, when the Pasuk says, so what does the word Sode add? Since the Pasuk tells us that value, that for every base core, the value is 50 Tzvoim, so based on that, you would only know if a person is Makdish a whole base core. Minayin Larabis Lesech, how do we know if a person was Makdish only an area where you can plant a Lesech, which is half of a base core? Bachasi lesech, or half of that, sa'ah, tarkav, which is three kavim, bachasi tarkav, bachilu roiva, even a roiva kav, which is a very small area, a roiva, and a base roiva is only about 10 by 10 amos. Minayin, how do we... What's the question?
Where did he go?
Even if he only was Makdish one base roiva, which is about 10 by 10 amos, minayin, how do we know that you figure out, according to the same valuation, a base roiva would be what, 1/200th or so of a base core? So fine, you 1/200th or whatever it is of the 50 slaves. How do you know you prorate it like that? Some of them are sada, mikol makom, therefore the pasuk says sada, regardless of the size of the sada. So you can't argue that these nekoyim cannot be counted because they're too small. Regardless of how small they are, they still have a certain value, and they should still be counted when you're figuring out the thing. We're talking about over here depressions in the ground that are full, not only they're 10 tefachim deep, but they're full of water. They're full of water. Therefore, they're not something that is plantable. So therefore, only area that is plantable, only area that can be cultivated, is considered under this rule of Zerach Chaim Asarim B'Chamishim Shekel Kof. Any area that cannot be planted, you don't go according to that. You go according to the actual market value of it. With a Steachos, that's Zerach HaKosov, as the Mishnah talks about over there in Erechin, even if you have a really, really high-quality piece of land, it's still 50 smolium per base core, even though on the open market it might get a lot more. But when it comes to, for example, let's say you're Makdish, an area which is all rocks, where it can't be planted anyhow, then you don't figure on that basis. Then you go and figure what's the market value of it. And you figure on that basis how much you have to buy it back to the Hekdesh for. Same thing over here, then. If these holes in the ground are not only 10 fucking deep, but full of water, so then they don't count with the field. You count them when you're counting them. Yes, they are. When you made the field Hekdesh, they're included. But you can't count them. When you're being purged of the field, they have a value, but they have an independent value, independent of the field, and therefore you have to calculate them independently.
But having water there on hand is a great thing.
But it's not. If it was enough to water the field, it would be enough to water.
If it would be enough to water the field, it would be one thing. But we're talking about these are small things that are not enough to water the field anyway. Yeah, it's a useful thing, but it's not, you know. Okay.
And a well, then.
Yeah, well would be different. A well is a normal part of a field. These are not, these are the depressions in the ground that are still, that happen to be full of water. Okay, the Gemara says, Dekanami. As a matter of fact, yes, you can prove that from the wording of the Mishnah, to Katani Dumya Desloyim, Gvoyim, because after all, the Mishnah had compared these depressions to high rocks. Now, rocks are things that can't be planted. Therefore, it's logical to assume that the depressions are also something that can't be planted, namely, they're full of water. Shmami, no, okay, that proves it. Okay, one more thing we have to ask, based on that, what do we care if they're 10 tefachim deep? Even if they're less than 10 tefachim deep, shouldn't it matter? Tosfos says the point of the question is, now that we established that the important thing is whether it can be cultivated, whether it can be planted or not, then who cares whether it's 10 tefachim deep or not?
But
if it was deep and narrow, maybe we're not necessarily talking about that. The answer is Hanu Nagni de Aramiku, Shedra de Aramiku. Because if they're less than 10 tefachim, they're bottled to the field. They're not considered something of their own. They'd be considered Nagni, which means like the basins in the ground, or the if they're less than 10 tefachim deep, then they don't have a name of their own. They're just considered like the basins that are in the ground. Because no land is perfectly flat. The same thing, the rocks would be considered Shedra de Aramiku. They'd be like the spine of the land. It's not considered to have any cheshivos of its own.
In Yerubin, we count 3 tefachim to be bottled. Here, we count 10 tefachim to be.
In Erevin, we don't say 3. No, in general, we say less than 3 tefachim is lobo. Fine. We're not talking about lobo over here. Less than 10 tefachim is not considered a separate yeshus, though. Yes, in Erevin, Shabbos in Erevin, we say that less than 10 tefachim is a carmelist. It's not Rishos HaYachad. Rishos HaYachad has to be 10 tefachim.
10 tefachim is still it's still relatively deep. If you're thinking of the depression in the field,
Whatever. But if it's less than that, then it's bottled to the field, and then we count it with it. Okay. So far we've established that when it comes to Hekdesh,
less we do count.
Yes, that's what we're saying. Even if it's full of water. Okay. So far what we established is when it comes to Hekdesh, when we're figuring out when the person is Makdish, a base kur to Hekdesh, and now it's being brought back from Hekdesh. If there's depressions in it that are less than 10 tefachim deep, even if they're full of water, they count towards the base core. If they're 10 tefachim deep but not full of water, they also count, or at least they count as separate units of their own. If they're more than 10 tefachim, if they're 10 or more tefachim deep and full of water, then they don't count. Then they don't count towards the base core at all. Next case. Now, in a case of selling a field, we learn in the Mishnah in Bava Basra, if somebody says to his friend, I'm selling you a base core of land, again, offer implying that land that can be cultivated. Again, you have ditches in there that are deep, that are 10 tefachim or more deep, or you have rocks in there that are higher than 10 tefachim, then they're not measured, you don't count them towards the base score. If they're less than 10 tefachim tall, they don't count towards it. And in that case, Ma'uk v'bachoma says, even if they're not full of water. Now, why is that different? Why is it different than the case of Hekdesh? My time, Omer Papa, Lafisha ain't Adam Reutza Sheet and Ismail Sada Achas, because the person does not want to pay for one field, the Yerola, because Shnaim or Kashloshim or Kaimis, and it'll seem like two or three places, like some of it is high, some of it is low. The person doesn't want that. With Hekdesh, you gave it to Hekdesh, somebody else is now buying it from Hekdesh, fine. The person wants to buy it from Hekdesh with the depressions and everything, they don't behave. But like this, you can't, you told a person, I'm selling you a field that's a base score, you can't expect them to take something where half the field is on this height and half of it is on this height or whatever.
And some of it is on this
and
part.
Some, part of it is like this and part of it is like this. The person doesn't want that. Which, by the way, brings Mepharshim to say that maybe the Gemara is changing its mind about the comparison. Before we said that the proof that the Nekoyim are full of water is because the Mishnah was comparing them to rocks. Now, all of a sudden, we're saying in the case of the Mecha, we're not saying that. So we're saying that these things are not are 10 tefachim deep, but not even full of water, and nevertheless, they still count as separate things. So the Gemara may be changing its mind and saying it doesn't even need to be that they're full of water.
So what about the Zeh on Mars?
What about it?
There was a big cave inside.
Avram was buying it specifically for the cave. Come on.
But
he wasn't buying it in order to have a field to plow and plant. Come on.
But
person wants to buy a field with a cave in it. That's
not the condition to go.
Whatever. I mean, he paid whatever. They made up a price between them. Yeah, he paid for. Yeah. Okay. So now the question is, hochamah. Okay. So now, yeah. Okay. So in our case, in our Mishnah, when the guy says, "I'm the kaddish you on condition that I have a base court of land," what's the din? Hektish minabin and loyal lemecha minabin and loyal. Are we comparing it to hektish, and therefore if you have, and therefore if you have only, and therefore if the depression's in it full of water, then they don't count, but otherwise they do count? Or are we comparing it to a mecha, where even if there are depressions in the ground that are not full of water, they still wouldn't count, as long as they're 10 tefachim deep? What's the nistabra lehektish minabin and loyal? It's logical to say that we compare it to the case of hektish. Because he can tell her, I'm not Tardachna, because I know my sinner. Because he can say, you know what, I'll go to the trouble of planting it, and I'll go to the trouble of planting it and bringing the produce home. So before, when we talked about where he says, I own land in this place, and it turns out he owns in a different place, then you can argue there's still a tircha for her, because sometimes she may want to go and look at the field or whatever. Here, where the field is in the same place, it's just some parts of it are lower than others, then he can well say, I'm willing to take on that extra tircha of planting the lower parts as well as the higher parts. You'll get our household income will include the full base core's worth of tefillah every year. And therefore, that's acceptable. Since we're talking about tanoim in kiddushin, so now we have the basic discussion about what constitutes a tanoim. Famous thing, we've had this before in Gittin and here and there in many places. Rav Meir Omer, kol tanoim she'ena ketanoim b'nei God or b'nei Reuven ena tanoim. Any tanoim that is not formulated the same way as the tanoim of b'nei God and b'nei Reuven, ena tanoim, is not considered a tanoim. Shenemar, as it says in the pasuk, Moshe says to them, "Vayomer aleihem." Moshe says, actually, not to B'nai God and Meru himself. He says to Yeshua and Elazar and Skenim.
Is he this what?
Moshe says to B'nai God and Meru Ruben came to Moshe saying, "We want to have our land in Avrayah."
Right.
Moshe gives it to them. Hayitachen, and you're gonna scare all the Jewish people from conquering Eretz Yisrael. You're being just we're gonna go ahead of the people and we're gonna help them conquer Eretz Yisrael, the west side of the Yad. So Moshe says, fine, in that case, then you can have this land. And he makes it official. Vayomer aleihem, he says to Yeshua and Elazar and Miskanim, Im Yavru b'nei God u'b'nei Reuven, if b'nei God u'b'nei Reuven go across the Yarden and lead you in conquering Eretz Yisrael, then you give them the land of Gilad, meaning Evra Yarden, as their inheritance. So Dave, and the possible thing is, Im lo Yavru chalutzim. If they don't go over as armed men with you, then they'll be given a portion among you in the land of Canaan, in on the west side. We had it in Gittin, we had it in a number of places, yeah. So the mayor says, therefore, you see from that you need Tanai couple. And actually, we see from that you need a number of things. We talk about this in Gittin, and we learn from this that you need Hain Kodim Lalav, that you have to have the positive, the positive comes before the negative, because in this case, he says, first, if they go across, then they will get the land, and if they don't go across, then they won't get the land. So that's Hain Kodim Lalav. It has to also be Maisa, it has to also be Tanai Kodim Lamaisa. First, you say the condition, then you say the result. He didn't say they will get this land if they go across. He says if they go across, they will get this land. Whereas if you say it the other way around, if you say the other way around, you will get this land if you go across, then the Tanai is no good.
If you will get this land if you go across,
that's not considered a valid Tanai.
If you go across, you'll get this land.
Is a valid Tanai.
The Tanai is first.
If the Tanai is first, Tanai Kodim Lamaisa.
No,
once we have it in the pasuk, we learn from it for other places. We'll see in the Gemara way. Okay. Rav Chanina ben Gamliel.
In other words, you cannot say something and something on condition of.
Right.
You have to say the condition.
And then the something, right. Right. Rav Chanina ben Gamliel. Rav Chanina ben Gamliel says, no, not necessarily. Actually, Tzorech HaDovel Oimer. No, you can't argue that the fact that Moshe repeated and said, if they go across, then yes, and if not, then not. You can't prove from that you need Tanai Kohol. Sheol Molek Ken, because if he didn't say the negative, if he didn't say explicitly, if they don't go across, then they will get a portion in Eretz Yisrael. Yesh B'mashma, then it would make it sound, Shachar Lebez Kanan Lo Yud Kholud. They wouldn't even get a portion in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Kanan, they'd get nothing. Yeah.
Wait a minute, if they're going... If they don't go...
If Moshe had not explicitly said what happens if they don't go, then it would mean that they won't get... Rashi learns that they wouldn't get anything. Im lo yavru, then they won't get anything. So he has to spell out im lo yavru, then they'll get an Eretz Kanan. so that you understand that. At least either way, they're getting something.
This was
the Mishnah, that's the point. Well, see him
tomorrow.
He says explicitly, Im lo yavru, then v'noichazu b'soichachem. That's Rav Chanina ben Gamliel is arguing, you can't prove from that that you need Shnai Kofel. You can prove from that, because in that case, he had to say it explicitly, because otherwise we wouldn't know what happens if they don't go across. We would mistakenly think they don't get anything. Tosfos, by the way, learns differently. Tosfos Yishonim over here, and regular Tosfos on Amud Beis talks about the possibilities that actually what it means is that if they go across, then yes, they'll get in Gila, they'll get an Abra Yadin. If not necessarily, I would say, if the pasuk didn't spell out then it might mean they're going to get a little bit in Gila. They're not going to get a whole Gila. They may get part of it. And they'll get something in Eretz Yisrael, but not necessarily that they'll get all in whatever. Either way, the point is, Rav Chanina ben Gamliel is saying you can't prove from that. By the way, is Rav Chanina ben Gamliel arguing on all the Tznoi, on all the Mishpatei Tznoi, or only on Tznoi Kofel? Rashi is only arguing on Tznoi Kofel. He does agree with the other things. He does agree you need a Hayden Kodim Olav. He does agree you need Tznoi Kodim Olamaisa. Tosfos discusses that and says not necessarily, actually. It may be that Rav Chanina ben Gamliel was actually arguing on all of them. He may be saying that you cannot learn from B'nai Gadol, B'nai Reuven at all about the dinim of what constitutes a Tznoi. So Gemara says, Shapir Kamalei Rav Chanina ben Gamliel and Rav Gamliel. New Rav Chanina ben Gamliel seems to have a good point. The Pasuk Taka had to say explicitly what's going to happen if Im lo yavru chalutim, because otherwise you would misunderstand. Amalach Rav Meir, so Rav Meir can answer you. Is Safadaitach lav lo Tznoi Kofel hu da'asa? Fine. But if the Pasuk was not actually trying to tell you the din of Tznoi Kofel, a din that you can generalize to other places in the Torah, if the Torah only wanted to say that to clarify that like this, if they don't go across, they're going to get an Eretz Canaan, as opposed to not getting anything at all. All the pasuk has to say is if they don't go across, they will get a portion among you. And of course, what does it mean? They'll get among you. It means they won't lose out completely. They'll get something. They'll get an Eretz Canaan. The Eretz Canaan lomali. Why did he need to add the words the Eretz Canaan? Which implies that they will not get in Gilad, they will only get in Eretz Canaan. Shmamina l'tznai kofel u'da'asa. That tells us that it means to teach us the concept of tznai kofel.
Otherwise,
the Torah would have just said, and we would understand that to mean that we would understand, the neuchas u'b'seichachem would mean that they're going to get a certain portion in Eretz Yisrael. But they're not gonna get only in Eretz Yisrael. They'll get a little here and a little there. They won't get compensated for what they're losing out in Eretz Gilad. Yeah. Rav Chanina ben Gamliel, Omar, whereas Rav Chanina ben Gamliel would answer to that. Ela Kosar Rachmana be'Eretz Canaan. Fine, but if the Torah didn't say be'Eretz Canaan, have Amina b'Neichas Tzechachem be'Eretz Gilad, then I would think that what is it b'Neichas Tzechachem would not mean they're gonna get on the west side of the Yarden in Eretz Canaan. V'noichas u'b'seichachem would mean they're still going to get on the east side, but they're going to be among you. Meaning like this, Eretz Gilad had already been conquered from Sichem and Oi. Like this, B'nai Reuven and B'nai Gad are asking for it for themselves. Rav Chanina ben Gamliel was arguing, if the Torah had not said the words Be'eretz Canaan, then V'noichas u'b'seichachem would mean if they don't cross the Yarden to fight with the rest of the Jewish people to conquer Eretz Canaan, then they will get a proportional part of Eber Yarden, of Eretz Gilad. Sechachem would mean the rest of you Jewish people. It would mean that all twelve shvatim would share in the Gilad, and Bnei Reuven and Bnei Gad would get their portion out of that.
But they don't get the whole thing.
They wouldn't get the whole thing, right? So therefore, the Torah.
They wouldn't get Canaan either.
Why not the whole Jewish people? Why not the whole Jewish people? B'nai Reuven and B'nai Gad asked for it. But the B'nai Reuven and B'nai Gad asked for it.
Does that mean that the B'nai Reuven will not get a crown at all?
It's an interesting
Rav Chanina, That's how Rashi learns. That Rav Chanina would say that
so they lose out completely.
They would still get something, and they would still get
they
something.
Get a little bit of.
That's the point. Rav Chanina and Gamliel say that is why the Torah has to spell out to tell us that that's not what it means. It means you won't get any portion in Gilad, but rather you'll get your 1/12 of Eretz Kanaan. But like this, if it only said Benoichas of the you would think they're going to get, you're going to think the other way around, exactly. You think they'll get a little bit of Gilad and nothing of Kanaan. Verda Meir, whereas your mayor would answer back, Besechachem, call a hechadeh, Bashma. Yeah, but the word Besechachem means anywhere where you have. Now that would include Gilad and it would include Kanaan. So therefore, of necessity, Benoichas of the Besechachem automatically would mean they get portions on both sides of the Yavid, a portion of the Gilad and a portion of Eretz Kanaan. Therefore, the word the Eretz Kanaan is extra, and that comes to teach us
side
on
both sides.
In the end, they didn't, because they fulfilled their condition. They went across and led the Jewish people in fighting. We're talking about what would have happened if they hadn't. We're trying to figure out the tonight that Moshe was making. If they don't, what would have happened? That's the thing. The mayor is saying that just based on the words, but once the pasuk says "im lo yavru v'neichos v'tzeichem," automatically what that would mean is we're not going to distinguish between Gilad and Kanaan. The whole thing is going to be one big area that's split up among all 12 shvatim. So Reuben and Gad will get a little here and a little there.
Like the rest of the Jews. Get a little here if they're not going over.
Because they're still shvatim, they're still.
But they're not
still
participating in the Mohammed.
Fine, that's
totally. No, they're making out better.
They're
making out better.
Yes. Hold
if
on.
They don't
hold
go.
Okay.
They're going to make out even better.
Hold on.
They're going to get here and they're
okay.
going to get there.
Okay, I understand the question. I understand the question. Now, can I give you an answer?
Sure.
Okay. One the answer. Shaila Schocham Chatzit Tshuva, fine, but ultimately the other Chatzit Tshuva has to be given as well. So, yeah. Tosfos asks exactly that. Tosfos asked that, what's the logic? They're not going to war. Why should they be getting any part of Eretz Kanaan? So therefore, Tosfos discusses that no, what it means is Moshe is not saying if you don't go across at all. He's saying if you don't go across leading the Jewish people in the conquest, if you just join in as regular soldiers among the rest of the Shvatim. Well, fine, you're joining in with the rest of the Shvatim and on an equal level with them, fine, then you're entitled to an equal portion with them in Eretz Kanaan. But not like this, where, like this, you're asking for a particular plot of land, you're asking for the whole Gilad for yourselves, that you're not going to get in that case.
So what is he asking of them? He's asking them,
he's not just going, he says to lead.
To a struggle.
The Torah Zoraiyat Kodkoid, it says about God, that he asks them to
make the point.
To lead the army.
The spearhead. The head of the spear. That's the most dangerous spot.
Very well, that's what he's saying, And actually, Tosfos also discusses the idea that you could argue that Eretz Gilad, which they originally laid a claim to in the first place, and in fact, Rashi and Amin Aleph points out not only they laid a claim to Eretz Gilad, but they're sort of rejecting Eretz Yisrael, but by saying we don't want a portion in it, you should argue that maybe you would cancel them and they don't get any part of Eretz Gilad at all.
The Rebbe has a sikh on that.
They
were looking towards Mashiach.
Right. But on the simple level of things, very well. But on the simple level of things, though, the Medrash actually brings it on the pasuk, says that it was an example of Nachla Mavahelis. It's an example of being hasty to get a Nachla. And actually, what ended up happening is they went into Golos 8 years before when Sancheirav came and started taking people into Golos. They went 8 years before everybody else. There were three waves of Golos. The Seder Olam described, Rashi brings it in a few places. First was Reuben, Gad, and Chatzi Shevet Menasheh. Then was the Shvatim in the north, Naphtali, Asher, that group. And then was the rest of the Ephes of Shvatim. Each group 8 years apart. Yeah, even though they were strong. Okay. Tanya, we're learning a bright. So Amar Rav Chanina ben Gamliel, Mashal Amar Adav Adoma. What's a mashal to explain how this works? La'adam Shalim Mechalik Mechatzim Levanav. Imagine you have a person giving out his possession to his children before he dies. Omar, he says, Pliny b'ni yir sada pliny. He says, my son Reuben should inherit this field. Or Pliny b'ni yir sada pliny. Shimon, my next son, should yashin this other field. Or Pliny b'ni, and my third son, Levi, yitin masayim zuz, he should pay 200 zuz, v'yirash sada pliny, and then he'll inherit this third field. The imlo yitain, but if he doesn't give, yirashem echad b'shar nechasim, then he'll inherit with his brothers in the other nechasim, meaning that he won't have one field reserved for him. They'll just divide everything equally. So mi garam lo yirashem echad b'shar nechasim. What is it that causes that he yarshins with his brothers in the other nechasim? Kfele garam lo. Only the fact that the father specifically mentioned that if he doesn't give, he still gets his proportional part of that field. No, so actually, sorry, Rashi learned
why
right. Rashi learns like this. What the father was saying is,
who's he supposed to pay it to?
The other brothers knew. Rashi explains the scenario as follows. He's saying that the other brothers, each of them is getting their field. The third brother, if he pays the 200 zuz, then he will be entitled to the third field in its entirety. If not, then he'll get one third of it, and his other brothers will each get their third of it.
Only
a third of it. That's the point.
Without payment,
right?
Payment full,
so therefore, payment. The point is, therefore, in other words, it's only because he said, Yirashim Echa B'Shar Nechasim, that Yirashim and his brothers and the other Nechasim, meaning he'll get his one third of that field, only because he explicitly said so. Otherwise, it would sound like he meant if the third brother doesn't pay the 200 zuz, he's going to get nothing. The same way with Reuben and Gad, Moshe had to say, if they don't go, because otherwise it would imply they're not going to get anything.
It's still not fair for the third brother.
Fine, it's not fair, but those are the rules.
Based on that, it's a very specific case. Why should it apply to other conditions?
Because that's, I don't understand. Once the Torah tells us in one case, then we learn a binyan afshmit for other cases. Anyway, so I was going to go through soon other places where we see conditions in the Torah that are repeated, and we'll see. Why this mashal that Rav Chanina ben Gamliel is saying is really not the same as our Mishnah? In the Mishnah, Rav Chanina ben Gamliel is saying that if Moshe had not specified what's going to happen if they don't go chalutzim, if they don't go leave the army, then they get nothing. Meaning that him repeating accomplishes that they get their place in Eretz Gilad if they do it. Whereas in the Mashal he's saying that because he specifies, then he gets a portion in the other Nechasin, which means that the Kfila, the repeating, what happens if he doesn't give the 200 Zuz, is accomplishing something as far as the other Nechasin. It's not the same thing. The answer is like Kasha, Homit Kame Dinamele Rameir Bene Chazu, Holobasa Dinamele Rameir Bene Chazu. Yes, but there's a difference. Rameir pointed out in the course of the discussion, we started out, Rameir said, you learn Shnai Kofo from Bene God Bene Ruben. Rav Chanina ben Gamliel argues to him that not because you needed the second part of the condition to teach us, because otherwise you would misunderstand what happens if they don't go. Rameir answers to him, that I don't need the words v'neuchazu b'seichachem for that. You're right. The words v'neuchazu b'seichachem themselves are not part of the Tanai Kofel. I'm learning the Tanai Kofel only from the words be'eretz Kanaan. Once your mayor pointed that out, then the only thing that I consider extra in the pasuk is the words be'eretz Kanaan, and that's where I'm learning out Tanai Kofel from. Well, then Ram Gamliel says, yes, but that's exactly what the Tanai Kofel is. You're thinking the words Be'eretz Kanaan are unnecessary because we could have deduced it from V'neuchaz of B'Seichem. No, if it weren't for the word Be'eretz Kanaan, I would misunderstand what V'neuchaz of B'Seichem means. That's what I'm giving my mashal on. That they would yarish in the other Nechasim, but not in Eretz Kanaan. Now that we established what the underlying argument is between Rameir and Rav Chanina ben Gamliel. So now, we can understand according to Rameir, Haynu Dichtiv, this is why we have a pasuk that says, the Eibushet says to Kayin, Im Tetiv Seis, V'im Lo Seitiv La Pesach Chatas Reivet. The Eibushet says to Kayin, what are you so upset that I didn't accept your korban? Im Tetiv, if you do good, Seis, then your Averis will be forgiven, or you'll receive a reward, your Seis, you'll receive a reward, Masa Skara, he says, V'im Lo Seitiv, and if you do not do good, La Pesach Chatas Reivet, then the Avera and the consequences of it, meaning the punishment, is crouching at the door, waiting to strike. So it's a Tanai Kofel, waiting to strike. So therefore, according to the mayor, very well, you need a Tanai Kofel. The Eibushet explicitly has to tell Kayin that if you do good, you'll get reward, and if you don't do good, you'll get punished. Tanai Kofel.
Otherwise, it would just circle.
Right. Because otherwise, it wouldn't be a Tanai. According to Rav Meir, otherwise, it wouldn't have a Tanai. Ella, little Chanina Lomeli, according to Rav Chanina, what do you need the Tanai Kofel for? What do you need the Avisha to repeat? The answer is Sakh Dar Chamina. Im Tetiv Agra, Im Loy Tetiv Loy Agra Vlodina. Because otherwise, you might have thought. The Avisha might have meant to say to Cain, if you do good, you'll get reward. If you do bad, there won't be reward, but there won't be punishment either. Yeah, Kamash Malan. Therefore, with the Torah, had to specify the same way as Rav Chanina ben Gamliel was saying by Bnei God and Bnei Reuven that it had to say Vneichos v'Tzeichos from Eretz Kanan at all four words, because otherwise we wouldn't understand what it means. The same thing over here. Without the Imloy Seitz and Lapasa Chatas Reivit, you would think that maybe the Eved is saying if you don't do good, then I'll just nature will take its course. There's not going to be any reward, but there won't be any punishment either. Next, Bishleim and Rav Meir, Kaino Dachtiv Oz Tinoka Me'olasi. Fine, according to Rav Meir, we have another case in the Torah where you have a double Tanai. Avraham sends Eliezer to find a wife for Yitzchak. He tells him that if you go to them and they're not willing to give you their daughter, they're not willing to give you their daughter to marry Yitzchak, Oz Tinoka Me'olasi. So then the pasuk says, then you'll be clean, then you'll be free of my curse, of my shvuah. I made you swear, if they're not willing to marry her off to you, then you're exempt from that. Again, why should you need to? He says you have to go and find a wife for Yitzchak over there, and if you go and they're not willing to, according to the mayor, we need that to tonight couple. According to the Chanina ben Gamliel, if he holds, you don't need tonight couple, then why do you need to repeat it? The answer is, we need it. What about, let's say, for example, if she's willing to get married to Yitzchak, but her relatives are not willing to let her go, you would think that maybe he should take her Baal Kocham. No, he didn't end up taking her Baal Kocham. They weren't happy with it. They said, let her stay around for 10 years, yeah, 10 months, or a year, or whatever. Fine, but so what was that? But the point is that he didn't have a chance. Back. First he said, Mashem Yatza Hadavar. The next morning they start making kindness, whatever, and then he tells them, we got to get going. Come on, and then Nikhil Anara, and once she says, I want to go, then fine, they're by Shalfi. But you would think otherwise, without this Oz Tinoka Me'olasi, that it doesn't matter what they say. As long as she's willing, force the issue. Kidnap her. Kamash Malan, therefore the Pasuk had to tell us that not.
Meaning that
if they're not willing to, then Oz Tinoka Me'olasi. And then Rashi learns then that it means go ahead then and marry her off to one of the Bnei Tz'knan. Yeah, because if they're not willing to, then they're not willing to. Doesn't matter whether she is or not. Tosfos discusses it a little differently. Tosfos has some problems with this explanation. First, among others, what do you mean? What do you mean? Is Abraham really saying if they're not willing to marry her off to you, then go marry, then go take him somebody from Bnei Tz'knan? Abraham is specifically telling him, Moistik Akishim of Bnei Tz'knan. So Tosfos says that's fine. Rav Meir would say that, look, there is after all a svara that when a person makes a tanai, they want it to include a positive and a negative. And still, he says you have to actually spell it out. You still actually have to spell it out explicitly. According to Rav Chanina, who says you don't need to spell it out explicitly, then what's the point of Bechlal mentioning it? Of course, if they're not willing to give, then there's nothing further you can do. Doesn't mean marry her off to Bnei Tz'knan. It just means, fine, you're exempt from the whole, from nothing happens. If you're exempt, doesn't mean you should marry her off to Bnei Tz'knan. To marry him off to Bnei Tz'knan.
In other words, the negative is the opposite of the positive.
Yeah.
Nothing more.
Right. But there's not necessarily, that it should have had to be spelled out. Then what about the pasuk says he may save Yishalomali? What about Abraham also tells Eliezer if the woman is not willing to go? What do we need to add that detail for? Same thing. If what about the other way around? If the family is willing and she's not, nicely bal kocha, you would think maybe Abraham is telling Eliezer bring her bal kocha. Chamash Malan, that Abraham is telling him don't do that. You need her consent and you need her family's consent. And if either one is not, if you don't get her consent or you don't get her family's, Oz Tinoka Me'olasi. Again, according to Rashi, Oz Tinoka in the sense that you can even marry her off to Bnei Tz'knan, and according to Tosfos, not you can marry her to Bnei Tz'knan, but at least you're exempt from the whole thing. You don't have to do anything further. But according to Rashi, he wouldn't have even had to say that. According to Rashi, according to the way Rashi is learning over here, he could have even said, I'll go to B'nai Sinan. Yeah.
But he couldn't say because he was specifically told not to go.
That's what Tosfos is arguing. That's what Tosfos, I'm talking about according to Rashi. Next. Fine, according to Reb Meir, we can understand why when it comes to the brachas and klolos in the Torah, why it says, if you keep my mitzvahs, then there'll be rewards, and if you don't keep my, if you reject my mitzvahs, then there'll be punishments. According to Reb Chanan ben Gamliel, why does the Torah need to spell it out? Shouldn't you be able to infer one from the other? And Marshall says, actually, we're not necessarily talking about, I mean, for example, you have there's a lot more klolos in the Torah than there are brachas. The brachas in Parashat Bukhokosai take up about 13 psukim, so 12 or 13 psukim. The klolos take about 30-some psukim. So there's no question. Obviously, some of them have to be spelled out. But the question is, the ones that are exactly the opposite of the brachas, and the brachas, for example, it says you'll have rain, and then the klolos says there won't be rain, that sort of thing, according to Chanan ben Gamliel, why couldn't it, it shouldn't have been necessary? Is that the Torah could have inferred it. The Torah could have implied it. The answer is, again, because otherwise you would think. The Torah is saying, if you go in my chukim, then you'll have brachas. And if you reject my chukim, there won't be brachas, but there won't be klolos either. You'll be left according to the laws of nature. That's the chiddush that now.
A little more straight
at this time. So the Achmas Yosef says actually the reason why
there won't be rain, then there's no rain. I mean,
no, because
you're not going to have the brach of rain, then you're not going to have rain.
You know what? I'll tell you. The Malbim has an interesting verse that I saw the other day in a different connection. He said, he talks about in connection with the rain from there in the time of Ahab, the drought from the time of Ahab and the rain after that. He says there's two types of rain. There's natural rain, and then there's rain that comes mitzad the Eivishter's special hashgacha. Natural rain, fine, that comes, you know, when you look at the weather forecast, you see it's going to rain tomorrow. Rain that comes by special hashgacha, that's the kind that's talking about in Parashat Bukhokosai. So that kind, then you could argue that the Torah is saying, if you reject the mitzvah, there won't be the hashgacha, the special hashgacha. The rain, there'll still be the regular natural. But the regular natural rain doesn't come regularly, especially in Eretz Yisrael. If you have to rely on regular natural